Welcome to the PowerWorks Podcast, your go-to source for all things automotive in Dubai. I'm your co-host, James Pikeway, and joining me is...
Glenn Power.
Together, we'll be discussing the latest industry news, reviewing the hottest cars on the market, and delving into the unique challenges and opportunities presented by the car culture in Dubai. From luxury imports to your local favorites, we've got it all covered. Join us as we explore the exciting world of cars and automotive issues in Dubai. So fasten your seatbelt and get ready for a thrilling ride. It's PowerWorks, the podcast. ChatGPT, thank you.
Please don't send us a bill for that. What's wrong with that?
I know, nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. I mean, that's...
It works.
I mean, you know, a little tweak. I need to practice saying it once or twice, but...
There's a lot to be said for it. But like you say, it's still... You've still got to... It's very hard when you're reading something.
Yeah.
To... Like, you see people doing press conferences and promo things for sporting events.
Yeah.
UFC in particular, where, you know, they've got certain things that they have to say, certain sponsors that they have to thank, and you can tell that it's scripted.
Right.
And it just doesn't sound like them, and it's not natural.
Yeah, exactly.
So you still need to get it and say it in your own words and make it your own and read through it and rep it out so that you know, okay, I might have not said that, I might change that. Because it's noticeable. You can tell when it's not your words.
Yeah,
but it's absolutely very, very, very good.
Hey, I want to let everyone know you're listening to us, and it could be listening to us 100.3 in Dubai.
Yeah.
You could be listening to us via any number of platforms, but you might also be watching us, the James Casts, to watch the entire podcast and outtakes or snippets and things. And that being said, you've got a lapel mic on. Can you turn it around? It's turned the mic's facing the wrong way. So it's just so we have like a...
There we go.
So we've got you covered. If you want to listen, if you want to watch, if you want to watch and listen, tune in to this podcast, and you can find the visual version on the James Casts on YouTube.
It's a visual delight.
It is a visual delight. Got a great one this morning. I'm driving in, and the morning drive is always interesting. So, you know, recap, driving in the no windows Jeep Wrangler, 2008 year model. That's why there's no windows, because they're kind of foggy if I put them in. then it becomes a thrill ride. And so I'm driving in, and suddenly I got this, I'm smelling burning oil. And I'm thinking, okay, very nice.
Nice.
Very nice. And the first reaction is 2008 Jeep Wrangler, no windows. It's my car. You know, so I'm looking at all the gauges, what few there are. I'm looking to see if I see smoke. And then after I figure out, no, it's not my car. Then it becomes, whose vehicle is it? Is it the truck that's beside me? Is it the one up front? But it was clear the smell of burning oil. And it's like very distinctive. And it's just like, oh man, that's not a good thing. Which got me thinking, as we talk about this all the time, and we talk about, you know, lubricants, got me thinking about your own situation here at the garage. And you have made, and we've talked about this before, but I'd like to delve back into it for a second. You've made a conscious choice to buy Total products.
Yeah.
You could buy anything. Castrol, you know, the name goes on and on. I mean, that one just comes to mind because I see it at the service stations all the time. Exxon, Esso, BP sells oil products. You could buy any of them.
Yeah.
Why are you going Total?
There's a few reasons. I suppose it's best to start at the beginning. So with Total, being a VW technician in the UK, we had to use Castrol.
Okay.
Castrol was recommended by the factory, and that's what we used.
There you go.
The only time we ever came across any oil that wasn't Castrol was when, you know, if a vehicle came in and it wasn't a VW, so it was one of our friends or somebody's relative, and it was a non-branded vehicle and they wanted to supply their own oil or whatever it is, because obviously, as you can in the rest of the world, but it's very hard to keep you have international warranty on a new car.
You can
repair your vehicle anywhere in the world with anybody as long as you use original parts. That warranty will be valid.
Okay.
In the UK, that's a very common thing for people to service their vehicles their own way, in their own place, maybe even by themselves, but they have to keep receipts for the original parts and original oil. So we might get a vehicle that's in warranty, but it's my cousin's or my friends or whatever, and they don't want to pay for the service at the dealer, so yeah. they'll pay me 20 quid and
okay.
supply me the parts, which is great. So that was the only ever really the time that we'd have non-Castrol oil. And then when I came to the UAE, I worked in a garage called AAA, and we used Mobil. Okay. Again, it was just the oil we used. That was just the way it was. I wasn't in a position to affect that or need to. It was fine. When I left AAA, I went to a place where we needed to figure out what we were going to do about a regular oil supplier for bulk oil, because all we had was a car came in, we'd buy oil for it.
Okay. So what did you do in that case? Because you've had exposure to two brands. I mean, you cut your teeth on Volkswagens. So it, in one sense, that would be the obvious choice to go, yeah. hey, this is the oil I know. This is oil we've used. Volkswagen has endorsed this for their cars coming off the line.
Yeah.
Must be good.
Castrol and Mobil were the first people I went to. Castrol okay. the first. And the problem was the distributor.
Oh.
It was just not a straightforward process to get somebody to actually say, yeah, we can supply you some oil. It made things, it was very, very difficult. There was three and four really? Layers of you've got to make a phone call, then you've got to send an email, then someone, sales rep's going to get back to you, and then it's this and that. So, you know, I just thought,
forget it.
And at the time, Total were doing a lot of marketing around the Formula One in Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
And I'd seen their boards going up on pretty much every other garage. So I was like, there must be something right. Well, at least they've got a presence. Let's speak to them. And then speaking to them, there's a guy called Liaz, who was at the time a sales rep. I think he's moved onwards and upwards now a few times, but he was just the sales rep for us at the time. Spoke to him. He explained everything, showed me how the business worked, basically. And they are the only oil brand here that are produced in the original source and made to the standard that suits the name, the brand, the value of the brand. They have a mixing refinery plant in Jebel Ali.
Wow.
They do a lot of the recipes, as they call them, for specifically this region and this market.
I mean, this is something I don't think people realize, is that all of these different lubricants have specifications for the parts of the world they're going to be in, where we, you know, yeah, it gets cool here, but cool might be the lowest you might get up in Jebel Jais or somewhere like that, zero. It's seldom that it gets much colder than that. But, and so you've got these lower temperatures, let's say in the single digits, maybe, and then you've got double digits up in the fives and plus, depending on where you are,
yeah.
plus sand and things.
Yeah.
So you need specific additives to oil, because it's, as we've talked about before, it's not just yeah. the oil that's coming out. And you want to think about this. Yeah. You want to be able to trust the product. Oil's not oil.
That's right. And being able to deal directly with Total and not a distributor, which is sometimes a 2- and 3-tiered operation.
All oil companies aren't doing their mix and stuff here in country?
No. No, a lot of it's imported as it is in a drum. So then when I was obviously an employee at this point. I stayed with them. It was fine. Everything was great. We'd never had an issue. They supported us with protective equipment for vehicles, floor mats, seat covers. I'm sure others do, but these guys are good. And it was all going really well. I obviously then eventually wanted to start my own place. And when I try and put the call into Total, not only as the sales rep, who at this point was a guy called Anaban, left, but his replacement had come to tell me that they were no longer serving the market directly. We had to go through a distributor. That was Total. So I was a little bit...
So it's okay, Total's gone. Going to be looking for another oil supplier.
I'm not going to go through that.
Yeah.
And nobody then in the market would supply drums. They all wanted to supply in plastic containers.
Well, that's not environmentally friendly. Single-use plastics. So drums will be coming back, right? Because Dubai is putting a ban on single-use plastics. And those little things, they're single-use.
Yeah, yeah. So trying to find somebody, the ones that came and were, again, direct to them and not through distributor was Shell.
Oh, okay.
So Shell came in, but they couldn't give me drums. I said, well, I'm not going to use them. I'm not going to waste plastic like that. So
they went, at that point, did they look at you and say, hey, but this is great oil?
So yeah, whether, they gave me the whole spiel and it was all, well, you know, we'll do you a good deal on it. And at the time, I think they were giving Salic credit away. They were giving you card.
So
credit.
this is kind of like the carrot. It's, yeah, we've got great oil and other people have great oil. So we're going to, you know, it's going to be the price or it's going to be the incentive. They're not pushing the fact that our oil is working in this way, or it's gone through this refining process, or all of this is the great oil. It's like, you know what? We're going to give you some Salic.
Yeah.
So well, that's just wrong.
I just wasn't going to throw the plastic away.
Yeah.
So I kept in touch with.
Are you a minority in that? Do you figure?
Almost certainly.
Yeah, I think, for sure. Yeah. Leading question.
I remember the lady from Shell, from head office, was brought in here to speak to me because they'd obviously told the story and she couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, but then Total got back in touch and said, look, we can do something for you. And so we're back dealing directly with Total and we're getting oil in drums and that's the end of that. Obviously, some oils, like smaller quantities that are needed for things like differentials, transmissions, automatic and manual, transfer cases, these sort of things, they're coming in plastic containers. You know, we don't do enough of the same kind of one to have enough space that we could afford to keep oil in a drum for. And that is what it is. But for the majority of stuff, when, you know, we probably use, we're using 100 litres every day on a normal sort of busy day of oil. So you're getting 208 litres in a drum. We have three common grades of oil and the rest of them, as and when we need them, we'll buy, as I say, in the smaller quantities. Okay. But it's all been good. Total have never given me an issue. Any car that we've had in that's been serviced regularly has never had an issue with any kind of oil degradation. So the thing that we've spoke about in the past called sludge, that a lot of people call sludge, carbon deposits, we've always had the Total oil used and the engines have always been fine as long as they've been serviced on schedule. So we've always been happy with them price-wise.
And quality.
I couldn't really give you a comparison because we don't check other people. There is obviously always somebody coming in trying to sell us some oil.
Yeah, we've got a good deal.
From, I mean, Sinopec, they're a huge Fortune 500 company, one of the biggest on there, and they're in the market. They come in. But again, they want to do cartons, plastic bottles.
Okay.
And if not, they want to put a big 1,000-litre tank in and come and fill it with a truck every couple of weeks. Well, we can't because we don't just use one grade of oil.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are the things where the benefits of Total oil are obviously the quality. For me, having never had a problem, but the fact that we can get it in steel drums, the fact that we can deal directly with Total, we're not speaking to anyone other than Total. So if there's a problem with the oil,
you're going back to the factory.
I'm going straight back to the actual manufacturer, which is why it works well for us. And they do a lot in the market here, and they support a lot of garages with marketing materials. And my experience with them has always been good.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. You know, and good friends of Total. So nice to hear that. Amazing news yesterday.
Oh, no.
I know. So first of all, Joey Woo Woo sends me a little bit of a jab about Jeep owners because, you know, he's got problems with Jeep Wranglers. He's jealous mostly. But he sends me this little jab of this little boy talking about how he's shaving his armpits and gluing the hair in other parts of his body because, you know, he wants to someday be like a big boy. And he's sending me that about Jeep Wranglers. And it's suggesting that Jeep Wranglers are just little kids who are wannabes.
Want to be what, though?
I don't know. That's the thing.
What do you want to be?
Yeah. So that was an interesting one. But, and what that, so that was in the back of my mind. And then there I am, just trolling the internet, looking for, you know, fun facts about cars and all sorts of great things. And what do I see? This is absolutely fantastic. Jeep's first foray into the electric market in the UK, the Avenger. It's going to be launched in Europe this summer. Launched in Europe this summer. Has already, it's the baby Jeep they're calling it. It's already been touted as car of the year for an EV in Europe.
Well,
already.
I mean, is that because it's the only car coming out this year?
Jeep's the only one. Well, if it is, that's
where,
great.
Where have they got?
It's already the 2023 European Car of the Year. It's not even being sold yet. You know why that is? Because those Europeans, they know a good car when they see it. And I have to say, the car that they were looking at was yellow.
Yeah, I mean.
It's not even on the market yet. It's Car of the Year.
£36,500. That's awful.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And look, it's an electric car, 248-mile range. They have the nerve to say, well, it is a lady's car. It's like, come on, guys. It is a small vehicle.
It has a bit of Peugeot about it.
It does. Like, I mean, that's when I looked at it, I'm looking at it, front and back end, to me, don't say Jeep, they say Peugeot.
Yeah, it'll do all right in Europe, that will, especially being electric. I mean, that's one of the problems you have with American brands. They just don't get that there's no space to drive American cars.
No, those big things.
In particular. And like, you know, even in Europe, a lot of Europe is the same. Rural areas just don't work with the American stuff.
I still have the story in my head from Colin Thomas, Mr. Pajero. Doesn't drive one, but he loves them. I don't understand.
That's why he loves them.
He's never driven one. And he's talking about when he was trying to, you know, he rented a Range Rover in England. Well, first of all, he said, no English people drive Range Rovers. And he said, second of all, the darn thing was so big that he curbed it more than once and had to get his dad to buff out the rims before he took the thing back. This is too big. So who's going to drive around a Jeep Wagoneer in England? Can you imagine on those country roads?
It's not happening.
They're going to get run off the road.
It's just not happening. That's always been the problem. I'm flicking through the gallery here. There's an orange one and a silver one. They look all right. It's very, very Peugeot.
And you look at the interior, it's very rugged, kind of got the Jeep look to it. It's, you know, they're trying.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what their target of sales is. I don't know that
their target of sales is women driving around in the city. That's who they're aiming this at. It's small, it's cushy, it looks nice, it's got a cute everything.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to know what it's like inside in terms of how the tactile nature of it.
Yeah.
Because it's,
I'd love to give it a drive, and you know, I thought that's a little demeaning to say it's aimed at women. I think I'd at least take it for a spin around the block.
Yeah, I mean, you see, the thing is, as we say in the UK, like if you look at the car market here, and immediately, and it happens to people that live here immediately. You know, there's a married couple, they're expecting their first child. We need a bigger car. I don't know why, but automatically, right? We need a bigger car. And they're going by the biggest four-wheel drive car they can afford.
And you know what? Every time I see someone do that, I go,
whereas,
don't buy the big SUV. And you can validate this statement. An SUV in a collision is more likely to roll than a car.
Yeah.
A sedan. Like, they roll.
Yeah.
I don't want to have my kid. You know, and everyone thinks, oh, they're bigger, they're rugged, they're tight. You know what? You get a nice, you get the nice Volvo. It's as protected as any SUV, and it doesn't tend to roll as much.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you've got to remember is that you're in one, so is everyone else as well.
Yeah,
but we're all going to roll. In the UK, in particular, I can speak of just from experience, that a family car is just something that's got four doors on it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've got seats in the back and a full door to get people in and out, then you will. I mean, we went for, I was maybe for 4 or 5 years, 6 years maybe, my dad had my granddad had a Prelude, Honda Prelude.
Nice.
With
two, not a family car.
Two doors.
It's not a family used car at all.
Fold the seat forward and climb into the back. And my dad had a,
and here you are, freakishly
Sierra
big.
With two doors. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I wasn't born this long. But
thank God. Your poor mother.
Still in labor. Maybe five or six, and my dad had a couple of two-door cars. It just, well, you can fit, can't you? Yeah. What you're worried about. So it's strange how things have changed, but I don't think that the there's no doubt that that's going to be aimed at families, but if it was sold here or in the US, it probably wouldn't sell in the US. It would be looked at as a first car or something.
Yeah, it's too small. It's a kid's car. It's your first, too small. Maybe a little city runabout, but yeah it's not going
to
be.
It'd be interesting to see if they did try and sell it here, because, I mean, the conversion on the currency makes that about 150,000 dirhams.
That's a lot of money when I can go and get a Skoda for...
You can get two.
Yeah, and you're going to get a nice vehicle. Oh, yeah, remember, Skodas are built on an awful lot of VW infrastructure. Yeah. So, frames, parts, and they're great vehicles. Does the Skoda guy still come in?
Yeah, saw Ian a few weeks ago.
I haven't heard from Ian, the Skoda guy, in forever.
You still get the Skoda press release and monthly media emails from him.
Nice.
Yeah, he came in a few weeks ago.
For those of you who missed it, Ian, the Skoda guy, used to call into our radio show. Maybe he'll start calling in and sending stuff into 100.3, because we are on 100.3 daily.
I'll have to let him know, actually, about it being on 100.3. I don't think I've ever told him.
Yeah, that could be really interesting.
Yeah.
But Ian, the Skoda guy, is the unofficial, what would we call him? Ambassador for Skoda in the Middle East, because... This guy, as well as driving Jeep, he still drives a Jeep, doesn't he?
That's right.
Yeah, he's got the Jeep. He's got the Skoda and the Octavia. I think it's an Octavia.
No, three Fabias.
Oh, three Fabias. This man loves Skodas, and I don't think Skoda gives him anything for him promoting them ad nauseum. Like, he's sending the press releases to people. And so if you've got questions about Skoda, fire them through. We'll get Ian to answer them for you. Maybe we can even get a call into him on one of our podcasts and share it with you. So that would be kind of cool. But just there's a lot of other options out there. And I think that becomes the problem with a lot of things like Jeep. And people look at me and they say, man, you're driving two Jeeps. I go, yeah, but I bought my Jeeps in 2008 and they didn't cost that much. Mm. They were affordable vehicles in 2008.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford to buy a Jeep now. They're way out of the range.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was... how was that, having just bought two cars and then it crashed?
Yeah.
That must have been a tough time.
That was, look, one of them was a demo model. So, we got a really good deal on it. That was the four-door. And the two-door, it was on sale because the dealer was looking to clear out old stock that was sitting around in the field. So both of them came in with great incentives. So actually it was pretty good. Like it was right place, right time. And they weren't expensive vehicles. People say, oh, it must cost you a fortune. No, if I bought it, it had to be affordable.
There's a reason you've had them for 15 years.
And the red one, four door Jeep Wrangler. So, and people always say, oh, not good as a commuter car to Abu Dhabi. Been to Abu Dhabi
all the time,
many a time. We used to go to Yas every weekend for the Flowrider Club every weekend. We were doing the Astro. That's four of us in there. Kids in the back. We're in the front. Perfect commuter. Yeah. Look, is it get the best gas mileage?
No.
But better than a patrol.
And much better than a Pajero.
we were at the pump the other day and I was filling up. And came to 182 dirhams. So I was really happy. And I'm looking at the patrol in front of me and I'm saying to the gas attendant, that thing's still filling? He goes, that's 300 dirhams. I'm going, what? He goes, oh, yeah, this is a 300 dirham fill that guy's going to be getting.
Yeah, yeah.
And
some of the Land Cruisers with the two tanks.
Who can afford that?
500 dirhams.
Yeah, I couldn't afford that. Every time you fill up, and they guzzle it too. Like now that makes it heavy, it's come. So anyway, back to the vehicles. People say, the Wrangler, not comfortable, not this. It is what it is, but it can be a comfortable vehicle. It just depends what you're used to. And we never had any problems. The red one, this is where I was going with this. Thanks for getting me back on track. The red one is going to be, it's touching on 400,000 kilometers.
Nice.
My youngest son said, really? That thing's still running?
Yeah, because he knows how he drove it. When he was there, he knows what he did to it.
Exactly. I said, there's a few lights I got to go get Glenn to check out. But he said, as long as they're not flashing and beeping, we're okay.
Yeah. No flashing, no beeping, no smoke.
There's no smoke.
Happy
just
days.
The little thing, 400,000. I think another oil gasket somewhere needs to be changed, but it's 400,000. It's expectable.
So what are you going to do though, James, one day when the day will come when you either have to say, I'm going to retire to the Bahamas,
Costa Rica,
Costa Rica,
yeah,
or Panama, if you're getting some sort of dodgy stuff, and you have no choice. But
well, and there's the song, right? There's the song. Panama. So that's enough, that's reason enough to go there.
Yeah, get ChatGPT to write one. What are you going to do when it comes time to either say goodbye to them because they've got to go to scrap, or say goodbye to them because you're leaving?
That well, that is.
Would you ever be able to buy another car again?
Probably not. No, no. Honestly, I'll be talking to Colin and getting a Pajero.
I'm sorry, but I'll no longer be able to do this podcast.
Or seeing if I can get, you know, one of your vans.
Well,
that would work. That would work.
Vans are where it's at.
You know, put a couple captain seats in the back, a little cooler table.
Vans are where it's at.
That's it. Have my sleeping bag so I can just sleep at work. It'd be great. I you know, that's the thing. I when I have to get rid of these cars, and the goal is, like every, you know, red-blooded Canadian, is you're going to drive it till it's dead. So I'm going to have to push it into the wrecker, basically. I don't know. I don't really. I always look at some of these new things that are coming. I'm rather infatuated with the late model Lincoln Town Cars.
Nice.
So, and if you anyone watch Mayor of Kingstown, which if you're not, you should. Jeremy Renner in that show drives a late model Lincoln Town Car. That's always immaculately clean. But every time I see that, my wife goes, "I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it." And I'm going, "We would look good in that." So
yeah,
that's my goal. Get rid of the Jeeps and get a Lincoln Town Car.
Well,
it's good to have goals.
I mean, that is a goal. I just need to see this Kingstown.
Mayor of Kingstown. And Lincoln, it's like a 1998 Lincoln Town Car, maybe a 2000. I don't know.
Yes, you get some white panels on it. Get some flashing lights on it.
Yeah,
bull it could bars be a, on the front.
Yeah, could be a police car.
Nice.
One thing, Mayor of Kingstown, if you're not watching that show, it is dark. It is dark, and it does not make you feel very comfortable being anywhere in the United States at all.
Well, I mean, did it need Mayor of Kingstown to do that? But no, look, when you go back to Canada, you just get yourself a diesel Jeep, don't you?
Yeah. By then, the hydrogen will be popping, so we'll...
Well, yeah, there is always that.
And look, I think a lot of people are getting rid of those bigger vehicles, so that'll be an opportunity to jump in on one.
Yeah, for a while here, people, like, you know, it's a lot of smaller cars on the road, but there's a bit of a reverse to that trend at the minute. Everything's just so big now.
Yeah.
Just...
Well, I think they're kind of flooded back on the market because they're here. So there's a lot of incentives to get them. And people are just saying, I often wonder if folks are driving around right now, that wherever they're listening to us, when you're looking around and all you're hearing is, okay, hydrogen, in the next 10 years, the UAE wants to become one of the hydrogen leaders in production of hydrogen, which is phenomenal. I think they're aiming too low and too slow, but no, look, I'm not in charge of that scientific...
Under-promise and then over-deliver.
Yeah, and I figure that's what they're going to do. They're going to, you know, roll it out next year and say, well, we're here, and it's ready to go, and we are it. And try and keep up, people.
Yeah.
So I think we've got electric stuff coming out. A lot of times the electric stuff just lends itself better for whatever reason, and I think it's just market creation, to the Tesla-style things. We see a lot of VWs right now. We're seeing some Mercedes. I've seen a couple of Volvos that are electric, and they really do look like a square battery, which is, you know, the whole vehicle looks like a battery, which, you know, hey, they do what they do. It looks really darn safe, though.
They always have been, right? Always have been.
So I wonder if people are not getting into all this hype. They're hearing all of this talk about traditional internal combustion engine vehicles are done. And they're going, I better get on the train now and get a chance to drive an internal combustion and a big bad boy before I'm going to be either taxed or incentivized out of that market. So I wonder. And I think the dealers have a whole bunch sitting around in the fields.
Yeah, I mean, it's already happening. I'm about to really put the crunch in London with the ultra low emissions.
Oh, man, brown car guy. Shazad Shaikh
is not happy about it.
He's going on and on and on. He's not
happy about it.
Yeah.
No. I mean, you're literally to the point where you can't even have them parked on the road outside your house.
Like, how does that work? It's like, really? So you park in front of someone else's house and you take the plates off every night? I don't know. I mean,
crazy.
I mean, I get it. we got to have change. We change comes now, but it's going to hurt for a while.
I'm sorry, but where's the alternative?
Well, that's it.
There's no, you know, you
can't have... No one's taken public transport. And he even talks about that. He's saying, and it's here the same thing. It's like, okay, we're going to get rid of all these gas-guzzling cars. We're going to take public transport. Yes, we have a public transit infrastructure, but it is not capable of transporting a quarter of the population it's every morning during rush hour and back.
It's not able to adapt and modify its schedule at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
The personal vehicle can do that.
Yeah.
And that was one of my main issues with the electric vehicle is that you very much rely on having regular charging options. Exactly. And if your daily use changes, which mine and most people's can frequently throughout a day from minute to minute, it's very difficult to do. So you can't have that. And look, there's a lot to be said for the government making regulation towards any industry, especially ours, which is a producer of so much pollution. But please have the answer to the to the problem before you just say, well, that's a problem, stop doing it. Because I don't, you know, how can you suggest, right, you only have the right now to use a certain type of vehicle in a certain area. That's fine, no problem, but I cannot afford that vehicle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So how is that fair?
Yeah.
How is that fair? Like, there's no... It just does not make sense. It's not even... All you're doing is you're going to create objection to the regulation, sure, not necessarily because they don't agree with the regulation and the sentiment and principle of it, but because they cannot abide by it.
Well, look, you know how it would have worked, and it could work, is if we stuck to a half week in office, half week at home for your employment. So then you've only ever really got half the workforce venturing out. Then with dial a bus and all these things, you might actually be able to make it work. But no one, employers don't want people staying home.
Well,
and then even though when the employees, so I laugh because the UAE, everyone's back at work.
Yeah.
Canada, the government can't even get government employees to come back to work. They're fighting it. And why wouldn't they? Because they don't want to do the commute. And it's the same problem. A developed country that has had public transport forever, they can't get the public transport working. Like, forget Ottawa with the LRT. I mean, it's always breaking down. And so this is again, that last mile. We can't get the last mile to work.
In the UK, I'm just going to fact check myself here, but they're talking about no car Sundays and all sorts of weird things.
Oh, man. How's that going to work?
I read an article about all the plans for it, and they're reducing the speed limit from 70 miles an hour to 64. That's a random figure, but that's what
64.
So, yeah,
how does that work? So you're going 65 ticket.
So yeah, I mean, literally like 70 in the UK is the speed limit on dual carriageways and motorways.
70 kilometers an hour,
miles an hour.
Oh, miles. Okay. Oh, I forgot, you guys. Haven't gone to metric.
So they're reducing that.
That's pretty fast.
64.
All right.
Which is, that's obviously been calculated by some.
Okay, I get that.
ChatGPT.
Yeah.
But the proposal to ban driving on a Sunday. What's that all about? So everybody's had this sort of romantic vision in the head of, well, I'll keep my old car, my old petrol car, my old diesel car, like people do these days with the classics. And then they'll take it out on the weekend on a Sunday morning. You know, people take their classic and their convertibles out on Sundays when they can just have a leisurely drive around and it's relatively quiet on the road. Well, nope. Proposals were there to stop driving on Sundays and also, like I said, reduce the speed limit. And that's two crazy things for me because a lot of people work on a Sunday.
Yeah.
But, you know, probably not enough to justify a massive double-decker bus driving around.
I'm just going to ask ChatGPT what it sees as five reasons for... here we go. Five reasons.
In the style of Dr. Dre, though.
No, I've asked it to do it. Five reasons for banning...
In the style of Rishi Sunak, or whatever his name
reduces
is.
Reduces air pollution. Banning a car on Sundays in London would significantly decrease the amount of air pollution.
Yeah.
Improves public health.
Yeah.
Encourages active transportation.
Yeah.
Reduces traffic congestion.
Yeah.
And promotes community and social interaction.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be hitchhiking and walking and talking to people. Okay, all good.
Listen,
reasons.
I'm not a climate change denier by no means. No. Yeah. But I totally understand and agree that we are drastically changing the climate.
Yeah.
But in the last 100 years, the temperature's raised about 1.3 degrees or something, is it, on average?
Something crazy.
Celsius. And in that time, life expectancy as an average across the globe has gone from something like 32 to 72 years of age. That's ridiculous progress. Ridiculous progress, right? Now, there are obviously always downsides to that. People now have already started to point out, and as I've just said, you know, this ULEZ regulations in London just put people out of the car market because they can't afford to buy cars.
Yeah.
So there are downsides to it economic wise, but by creating this driving ban on a Sunday, how much? I'm not saying that you shouldn't do, but what's the alternative? What's the solution then?
Yeah.
Well, people don't work regular hours anymore.
So where do you go for where do you go to make sense of things? You go to Sesame Street.
Right, okay, yeah.
So I did ask ChatGPT what Ernie and Bert would say about, you know, what's good about electric cars.
Yeah.
Well, ChatGPT corrected me very quickly. Said, well, first of all, Ernie and Bert are fictional characters from the children's television show Sesame Street. So they don't have an opinion on electric cars. However, because they don't have an opinion, but they might. However, Ernie and Bert may be excited about electric cars because they're environmentally friendly and emit no pollutants. They might also appreciate that electric cars are quieter than traditional gasoline-powered cars, which would reduce noise pollution. In addition, Ernie and Bert might be interested in the fact that electric cars have lower operating costs compared to gasoline-powered cars, and they save money on fuel. However, it is important to note that this is all fictional and made up, as Ernie and Bert are not real people and don't have opinions on any matter like this.
Well,
there we go. So if Ernie and Bert think it, because they're fictional, but they do have ideas. That's what ChatGPT is telling us.
Well, the problem is ChatGPT, right? Not being funny.
Yeah.
The issue is electric vehicles use a lot of raw materials that we have to dig out of the ground, that we have to ship across the world. I think I remember Jeremy Clarkson going on a rant about the Toyota Prius, which is obviously he hates the vehicle. And I think quite justifiably so. He mentioned to, I think his rant said something like, the raw materials get dug up, shipped around the world to the factory to make the battery, shipped back to the factory that builds the cars, to then get shipped back to the country that sells them.
Right. Well, this is the problem.
And have you seen
the raw materials get harvested for next to nothing and the added value?
Have you seen the footage and the documentaries about cobalt and lithium mining?
Oh, man. It's crazy.
Like thousands and thousands of people not employed by the mines, just digging through the heaps outside of them. No protective equipment, no tools sometimes. For what?
Yeah.
Because they've got no... They are in the most horrendous state of poverty that we couldn't even imagine what that's like, and they're having to dig through waste materials from a mine to try and find something that will make them enough money to pay to eat that day, and it's not regulated.
Yeah.
So hey, I think for me it would be much better to have a solution to the problem before stating there's a problem, let's stop. I don't for one minute agree that it makes any sense. You lose support for the movement. You don't generate support. In the UK, 10-15 years ago, there was a big push to get the car market going again. And the government said, well, look, let's get rid of all these old cars off the road, bring the pollution rates down.
Yeah.
Car dealers were incentivized to give £1,000, and we'll also match that. So everyone that buys a new car, no matter what the vehicle they trade in, they will get a minimum of £2,000 onto the trade-in value.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
That is.
You know, especially when we're at a place like Volkswagen where they've got, you know, there's a Polo in the showroom for £12,000-£13,000.
Yeah.
By the time they've traded their car in, they've got a brand new car. So they've got an old 20-year-old car off the road and got someone in a brand new low-polluting car.
Yeah.
Because petrol, in fairness now, a petrol engine puts out very, very little pollution relative to...
I'm glad you mentioned
10
this.
10 years ago.
There are a group of people here in Dubai. It's a Dubai phenomenon. When you buy your car, everyone knows there in the back rear window, maybe it's on the driver's side, you get a sheet that talks about, you know, what the specifications of your car. And on the top of it is a fuel efficiency rating.
Yeah, yeah.
From good to...
Same as the one you got in your fridge, right?
Yeah. Well, people tend to leave it on.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're talking, they've gotten their windows tinted. That piece of paper is still there. The car could be 10 years old.
They're all red or orange here as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like the Super Safari.
And yeah. And so I'm going walking by one, and I'm seeing Super Safari. I'm seeing this van. I'm like... And it's in the worst fuel economy on the planet. And I'm thinking, why are you buying this car?
Yeah.
Why? I mean, I just don't get it. And then I've walked by a few that I'm looking, I'm going, oh, that's a real... And then I'm going, it's got amazing fuel economy.
The massive, massive irony to a lot of this is you get... We all see these Toyota Hilux and Toyota Hiace vans nipping around the city, the Nissan Air vans, the Nissan Safaris, Super Safaris. They are some of the worst polluting vehicles on the road.
Yeah. I laugh just because, you know, there's hundreds
and
of them.
And then thousands. You know, you couldn't even count them from here to wherever you're going. You'd lose count every day. And
that's the first place you want to turn to. Let's make these things
exactly.
You fuel efficient.
Improve what's there. Yeah. And give people an option. Make it a slower chain so people will come along for the ride.
Yeah.
It's not like there's an option to say, you can't drive. Now, if Sheikh Mohammed said tomorrow, I'm sorry, guys, we're going to have a week where no one drives a car, in this country, everybody would listen.
Yeah.
I would.
Everyone. It's done.
And it would be respected and it would be done. And that would make a huge difference.
Yeah.
A huge difference, right? But that can only last for so long. People have to be given an alternative where, for me, it would be much better to let the economy thrive, keep things going as they are, whilst in the background you're working on the alternative. So then in a 4 or 5 year window, you can then come at the end of that and say, look guys, this is the option we've got for you. We have now designed, developed, and now in our own country can build 10,000 of these EVs a year. 10,000 a month, whatever the number may be, and we are going to give you an option on these cars to get you into them, and we'll take your old car either away from you as a trade-in towards it, or whatever, you can pay for storage for it, but we require that during the week you use this car. And that's a much better way to do it, because what if somebody says, James, you can't drive your Wrangler anymore? Okay, who's telling my boss?
Yeah.
How do I get to work?
Yeah.
Whereas if someone says, James, you can't drive that Wrangler anymore because we're going to give you this. We need you to use this. This is what you need you to use for getting to work.
I'll be happy, but I'll drive it. And I'll say, okay.
I know it's a little bit Logan's Run and everything like that, but it's an option and it's an alternative, which would then solve the issue in the short term, which can then be constantly improved upon. And it's not that difficult. One thing COVID taught everybody is how reliant every single developed country is on external third-party countries for anything that's needed.
Yeah,
the UK don't make anything anymore. 80% of its food or something's imported. What's that all about?
It's unbelievable.
Not acceptable because people want to eat avocado all the time.
Yeah.
Well, just deal with it and have mashed potato.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, and that's the problem. And you need to have the alternative in place before you take something away.
Yeah.
And in the UK, that is a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, and it's just not a sustainable model. And now people like Shahzad Sheikh, who...
Brown car guy. Look him up across all your socials, YouTube, Instagram.
He comes across as angry.
TikTok.
But you can empathize with it.
Absolutely.
And completely understand why he is that way. And so automatically you're going to agree with him over following the regulation. And there will be people that will say, yeah, of course, this is a great thing, but they probably don't drive.
Yeah.
And if they do, they don't need to, and they can walk to work, or they don't, or they work at home, or they, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just not solving a problem. It's actually creating one, and there will be more and more resistance to the actual fight of putting it right. And I don't think it's the right way of going about
it. There we go. Real quick one. Saw a car yesterday. I had to look it up because I thought, okay, this is looking kind of weird, but kind of not. The Mitsubishi, right off the bat, you're rolling your eyes. Mention the word Mitsubishi, a big blowout. Where is this going?
Unless you follow it with Evo 8.
Expander.
Right, I'm just going to go to sleep.
X as in the X, the letter Pander.
Oh, I've seen them.
Is a popular compact MPV multi-purpose vehicle. Been well received in markets. It's well received. Spacious, comfortable interior, plenty of room for passengers and cargo. You know, functional design. It's kind of a weird little mini van. Problem is, it does get decent fuel economy. It does have apparently a well-tuned suspension. Responsive handling.
It hasn't got that.
No, but it hasn't got that. You know what the complaint people have of it?
Looks like it was designed on Minecraft.
Okay. Okay, that's one. Big one for me. Safety features might not be as robust as some of the newer vehicles, so it does have obviously the safety features you need, but doesn't have a lot of add-ons. The entertainment system.
So you got music while you
not the best.
Slowly crushed.
So if you're the advanced entertainment system.
Tape deck.
Yeah. And there might be more affordable options beyond that. So just little things. It does have lots of space, but it's not the best choice for those looking for a really good fuel efficient vehicle either. So it's kind of just like we talked in a previous podcast about the you gave up car.
Yeah.
It might be the you gave up car. It looks kind of cool.
No, I don't think it's the you've given up car. I think this is the I never want to even start car.
It's, you know what? It's one of those cars you drive by and you go, hey, that looks kind of cool. And then you get into it and you go, it looked cool.
What an awful piece of machinery that is. Honestly, right?
Apparently, and I keep hearing this from everyone, Mitsubishi is stopping to make the Pajeros.
Yeah, they have, yeah.
And I wonder if they're just putting some of their motor technology into some of these other
first
things.
First of all, there was no technology on that motor. Right?
Well, that's what they're saying about the Expander. Yeah, well, there's no technology in there either.
No. That engine was horrific, and it had been for years in terms of perfectly fine reliability.
Yeah.
As long as it was serviced. We have a nice Montero Sport there to show what happens when you don't service it because it's smoking and needs a new engine or a rebuild of that one. Makes no difference who makes your engine. If you don't look after it, it's a mess. Yeah. But they're so polluting. So polluting, and the fuel economy is shocking.
Yeah.
Really, they made they're the only car that is whittled out of lead. It's just lead. I just don't get it. But they're so heavy unnecessarily.
What do you think's going on in that industrial mind complex with those vehicles that they just never seem to veer towards? Hey, we're going to make this more fuel efficient. We're gonna throw some technology.
Because they don't need to.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. At the
price
end of the day.
Point. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you this now. I would never buy, and I totally appreciate and see the justification for the price difference between a Toyota Prado and a Mitsubishi Pajero because the Prado is a lot more refined. But that's like being the nicest guy in prison. It's in those two cars, it's not a big deal, is it?
The Prado is like being the nicest guy in prison?
Saying when you've got the Prado and the Pajero together, that the Prado is more refined than the Pajero is like being the nicest guy in prison. It's not art. Like what?
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
So, but the Prado's literally twice the cost of the Pajero. Well,
so
it's seven seats.
Yeah. It's the better vehicle, but it's half the price.
Yeah, I mean, what?
So where are you going to go? So you're going to go for the cheaper car.
I get why that. And I've had a Pajero when I had no money and I knew I couldn't be affording to fix my own car. I bought a Pajero because I knew it would be reliable. But it literally set the carbon monoxide detector off in the house every morning when I went out and started it up.
Okay, there we go.
So just not good. Just not good. I mean, look, I'm sat here as a VW technician. And everyone knows about what Volkswagen did with the diesel stuff and Mercedes and Audi and everyone else that's been dragged into it in Europe. So I get it. But side by side, pound for pound, the technology on the engines, on the European stuff, is so much, because it has to be, so much better. And they aren't as polluting as they think. Not denying that it's important to stop polluting, but I'm just saying it doesn't need to necessarily be how we're doing it.
And on that note, we've got to close up the podcast for yet another week. We'll be doing it all again real soon. Glenn Power, Powerworks Garage. My name's James Pikeway. Wherever you're listening to us, keep listening, keep sharing, and you can watch us on the James Casts on YouTube. Glenn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll do it all again real soon. This is the Powerworks Podcast, and that sounded crazy.